We were discussing the role of the intuitive mind in the progress towards the supramental consciousness. To recapitulate what we were discussing last time, the supermind, we said, is plenary self-knowledge and all knowledge. It is supremely self-aware and at the same time aware of all, aware of the universe. Along with its knowledge, it wields also appropriate power. In other words, it is omniscient and omnipotent. If this is the poise of the supermind consciousness on its own plane, when the supermind is being organized in the earth consciousness by a divine being, say a God, the same essential characteristics will surely be there. But in the course of working, account will have to be taken of the terrestrial conditions, and the establishment of this consciousness has got to be progressive, much more limited will be the working of this consciousness in an individual who is growing from the mental levels to the altitudes of the supramental. The individual is based, he has his roots in the ignorance that casts a long shadow on the workings of the mind. And however hard he may try, the effects of this basic disability prolong themselves in 100 ways. So the growth from the mental to the supramental is slow, often obstructed, often diluted, and it takes considerable time if it is worked out by the individual alone. Luckily, we have admitted a new factor in the situation, the factor of the divine Shakti, which takes charge of the situation and conducts operations in its own high wisdom. Another difficulty is that we have no organs at present appropriate to the supramental consciousness. The mind has forged its own faculties, but the supramental consciousness has still to forge its own instrument for direct functioning. At the moment, it functions indirectly through our highest developed faculties, like spiritualized mind, intuition, flashes of illumination, and so on. And the process of establishing new organs, modifying the workings of the mind and uplifting them into the higher workings of the gnosis, these steps entail a larger change than the change that was imperative when the animal mind had to change and transform itself in the reasoning mind of man. The change is infinitely more, the gulf is greater, and it needs a long spiritual development before the present mental organization can be assumed, lifted up into the next higher dimension. And in this process of transition, intuition has a mediatory role. At present, the functioning of intuition is nowhere organized. Even in those few cases where intuition can be said to be active, it is more or less an interference with the mental workings. One can never be sure that it is always intuitive working that we are faced with. All that we can say that we have periods when intuition works more than during other periods, that certain conclusions that we arrive at are based more upon intuition than on mental reasoning. This action of intuition, however intermittent, has got to be extended and put more or less on a permanent basis. The extension of the action of intuition, the purification of the mental processes so that they may not interfere with the action of the intuition. They are two parts of the same process. Which part to emphasize when is always left by the wise seeker to the divine Shakti. There are a few, three or four phases that are normally resorted to in the process of this change. One is to silence the mind. The mind is withdrawn from its restless surface activity, thought activity, quieted and turned inwards towards the self. And the mind waits for the self to disclose itself. It waits for the intimation from the self. The mind does not think. It does not reason. It refers to the self, the intuitive self that is inside, and waits for the response. When the mind is silent and quiet, the illumination of the self reflects itself in the calm waters of the mind. Even then, interference by the old processes of the mind is possible. The inferior mentality, when the mind comes into action, when the knowledge gained in the silent poise is sought to be translated into mental terms, the inferior mentality intervenes. It gives its own coating, it gives its own interpretation. Now this element of inferior mentality has got to be pitilessly eliminated. The other method is, which is more natural to some temperaments, the way of bhakti, devotion. One is conscious that there is a divine indweller. One is drawn to the presence of the Lord, the divine Lord within. All emotions, all mental movements spontaneously flow towards Him. And this indweller, you must note, he is not situate in one physical position. In all parts of our being, there is this divine element this self of intuition, intuitive, this self-giving intuitive guidance behind the mind, behind the emotions, behind the life energy, behind the physical. Though the heart center, connected as it is with all these different locations of consciousness, can be described as the capital of the Lord. And the seeker enters into communion with the Lord within for intuitive guidance. The inner Purusha, he gives the intuitive guidance, may be in the form of words, may be in the form of feeling, may be in the form of a direction, silent direction. Still, as long as the outer nature is not sufficiently purified, interference is to be guarded against. Whenever the Purusha guides, there is a certain amount of certain quality of miracle, because that guidance has to gain ascendancy over number of other voices and noises that are current in our being. And it is the miraculous impact that the guidance makes itself felt. And this miraculous impact, while it is spectacular in the earlier stages, needs to be normalized later on. If it is always kept in its miraculous character, it may be sabotaged at any time by the upsurge of the lower workings. And it cannot be normalized in the existing state of things. The inner guidance has always an element of miracle about it, because, Sri Aurobindo points out, the heart center is not the highest center that we have got. The highest center of consciousness that we have organized in our being is at the crown of our head, and the higher levels of the mind, the embodied mind, and that is called the lotus or the chakra, of the lotus of thousand petals. Now, when we speak of thousand petals, it is not to be literally taken that the lotus or whatever it is, that configuration, has exactly 1,000 petals. In the ancient system, spiritual and occult, there are certain figures which indicate an amplitude, a fullness, a plenitude, 10, 100, 1,000, 100,000, and so on. So when they mean 1,000 petals, it means a plenary manifestation of the consciousness, the highest, fullest manifestation of consciousness in the human system. And that is indicated by the 1,000 petals. Now this Sahasradala at the crown of our head is not to be confused with what you may call the brain center. The brain is only a physical organ, but this highest center, called the center of a thousand petal lotus, is above the physical brain. In fact, it is not at all situated in the physical body. If we are to be in direct contact with it, if we are to receive guidance from the knowledge enshrined there, we have to make a habit of lifting our center of thought, center of action, above the head. Above the physical head is the subtle physical realm, domain of spiritual knowledge, which opens above it two communications from the still higher centers of spiritual mind, intuitive mind, illumined mind, and so on. That is one way to lift our center of action and thought to the highest center of the thousand-petaled lotus above the brain. What Sri Aurobindo describes when he speaks of how he wrote the Arya, he says his brain never functioned at that time. He always wrote from a center above the brain, above the physical head. Most of you would have read that passage in Sri Aurobindo and himself. The silencing of the mind, communing with the inner center, lifting our center of thought and action above the head. These are three difficult processes. But there is a fourth process open to the seeker, which is not that difficult, and that is to develop the intellect, to develop our mind as it is upwards, not to accept its present workings as the only possible way, but to recognize that the mind can be developed. The processes with which we are familiar can be toned up, changed in their character, extended in their range, uplifted, subjected to a transforming change. The transformation of the intelligent will, so that it does not depend only upon the sense data or the data given by the reasoning mind, but recognizes a different range of phenomena which also demand acceptance. Recognition and development even of the intellectual intellect as not the sole judge and arbiter of things, but that there is some super intellect above it, and the intellect has to grow into something above it so that it becomes more effective and a more reliable instrument for arriving at truth. And it is here, in this process of developing our mind with all its different faculties into something superior to mind itself, something above it, of which we have daily evidence. The mind itself doesn't need any proof of it. It is there that the intervention of the supermind becomes imperative. Where the upward effort of the mind is to be done, and in what areas the descending action of the supermind is to be allowed, encouraged, promoted, this is beyond the human intelligence. This is left to the discretion, trustfully, to the divine Shakti. The divine Shakti, when it is left to operate in its full freedom, without interference by our arrogant mind and egoistic claims, that Shakti takes up all the four methods, depending upon cases, depending upon which part is strong in which individual. But all the four processes are used, that of spiritual silence. It is indispensable. Whatever the path, whether your path is that of devotion or work or knowledge, the silencing of the mind in a spiritual consciousness, quieting it so that it may be suffused with the spiritual vibrations, calming it so that it may reflect the image of these superconscient truths that is indispensable. There is also the awakening to the intuitive being within us at all levels. Intuition doesn't come, as I said, only in the head. There is an intuition in the heart, there is an intuition in the body. Everywhere, the divine consciousness as intuition is there. We may or may not be aware of it. We may or may not receive its action directly, but whether in the form of instincts, what we call hunch, a sort of a premonitory feeling, whatever it is, it makes itself active. Awakening to the action of the intuitive being within us and rising with our mind to the higher summits of the mental regions. All this threefold upward action evokes the descent of the supramental energy, and which descent alone can give completion and give permanence to spiritual silence, intuitive guidance, and the elevation of mental working to the higher spiritual workings. With all these methods, the first result that we see is what Sri Aurobindo calls an intuitive change. The working of our mind undergoes a change. Though the mind may imitate some of the intuitive workings by the rapidities with which it comes to certain conclusions, by the certainty with which it speaks, still one can know the precise nature of the intuitive knowledge. Intuition, as Sri Aurobindo has said, is an edge of truth. It is a ray of truth coming directly and striking on your being. Fitful at present, the working of intuition can be normalized, can be established as part of our system, but that is not the end. Though there is a temptation to stop at the intuitive level as the direct working of knowledge, still Sri Aurobindo points out, it is still mind, it is still intuitive mind, and wherever there is mind, there is always the possibility of the basic and fundamental limitations of the mental apparatus exerting themselves, coming into their own at some time and undermine the reliability of intuition. It is wise to recognize intuition as a link between the human mind as it is and the divine mind as it is waiting to be formulated in humanity. A necessary link, a luminous link, but it is only a link. The perfect perfection to which the integral yoga aspires can only be attained at a still higher level, at the level of the divine gnosis, this supramental consciousness, or where the plenary supermind reigns, beyond the possibility of being diluted, coated with the mental operations. And that brings us to the next chapter, the gradations of supermind. Because the supermind is not of one piece, as we observed last time, there are gradations, and after the intuitive levels are crossed, we go to the lowest levels of the supermind. I suppose we can take it up at the next session. Any questions? What is mathematics? After all, what is mathematics? Mathematics, as I have understood it, is a science to arrive at a direct understanding of the processes of nature. How things happen, what processes, at what speed they work. Now, if the same results that mathematics would give as a result of long processes, those results are given by intuitive flashes. Mathematics as we know it today won't have function. They will have a role to subtilize the mind, to accustom the mind to move into dimensions other than the purely physical, symbolic ways. After all, numbers are symbolic. They symbolize certain truths. So mathematics is a science which helps to subtilize the mind, to lift it up from being always engrossed in physical details and processes. But it too, in its present form, has a range beyond which it cannot go. Grammar, linguistics, these are all included in what are called the lower sciences. They don't give you direct knowledge of the reality, though they prepare and fashion the mental apparatus to receive the higher knowledge later on. Ron perhaps could say something.
Well, I don't know very much about mathematics. From what she's saying, it sounds like she's talking about mathematics that I know even less about, which is sort of pure mathematics, where you try and express the forms of things without the external stimuli that you normally have in science.
Through mathematics, the ultimate expression of truths has to be only by idea, consciousness. You see, a state of things is envisaged when I will not have to express what I think in so many words. I have only to formulate it in my mind, and it automatically gets formulated in all the minds. So the ancients always spoke of the language of silence. See, the proto-teacher yogic of yoga in the Indian tradition, he doesn't talk. He always sits with the five disciples under the tree, but he doesn't talk. He is called Dakshinamurti, facing the south. He has some two or three teachers, that's all. He doesn't talk. And all knowledge that has come down is supposed to have come down from him. Well, whatever, it is a legend that shows that even then there was a recognition that knowledge can be communicated without the aid of words, of language. a direct communication. If the kind of mathematics which she speaks is part of this, naturally it will receive due recognition. But I don't think they mean that. See, they accept that what those, even the higher mathematics or whatever it is, I think they call for a certain acceptance of a table of symbols. Isn't it? Certain things express certain things, which you and I, ordinary people, can't understand, only those higher people can understand. But even those forms are not necessary. So higher mathematics may be made unnecessary even, may be dispensed with. I think higher mathematics and all that, these are attempts of the mind to exceed itself. See, I don't know, I don't understand the full implications of your question, but I can only say that when our Pradyot Bhattacharya, he was the chief engineer of the DVC, Damodar Valley Corporation, and afterwards an advisor to many of these engineering projects, there were times when, with their best skill, the engineers, both foreign and Indian, could not come to conclusions. They calculated figures and everything, but they could not spot out the place where they had to do certain things for their bridges or dams and all that. You understand? So he brought the whole map and things here and showed it to mother. And when mother was told this is the problem, she placed her finger on a spot. This has happened many times. And it was found that that was the precise spot which other engineers later on arrived at after long, long calculations and labor calculations, and that was the right spot. Now, what do you say to this? A spiritual comprehension of the truth, you know, precise point it, the higher knowledge, the spiritual knowledge or the supramental or nearing it, it lands exactly on that spot, to arrive at which you will have months after months mathematical calculations. No, no, I'm just saying, so the whole, all these things may be rendered unnecessary.
What progress was being made? That's the meaning of the question. What all these investigations into something that
you... They're subtilizing the mind, training the mind into subtler processes. They have their use, they have their role in civilizing man, refining the mental faculties. But beyond that, what Sri Aurobindo calls the mental range, beyond that, neither pure philosophy nor pure mathematics have a role.
How far is it important that after a certain stage of development one still continues training the mind and also the physical body?
For expression. It is not that difficult to acquire a state of high consciousness on the summits of one's being or in the depths. But to express it, to organize it in one's being, all that training is necessary. By the mere fact that you have got it, this is not guaranteed. There will be interference. If you start functioning on that, there is where the interference, the prolongation of the lower rule into the higher realms, all this happens. That is why, even after you get that knowledge and all that, the mind, the body, all these need to be educated.
This is a different subject. When he, in this chapter,
he has taken, when he speaks of the spiritual stages, I think he has taken all those. Because after the mind, he only speaks of the intuitive mind. So obviously the steps between the intellectual mind and the intuitive mind are covered in the spiritual ranges. He says spiritualization is necessary. We have to grow into spiritual consciousness. All those he has taken as part of the spiritualization. Similarly, between the intuitive and the supermind, he does not speak of the overmental dream. Possibly at that time when he wrote, the emphasis was not so much on this. Because otherwise he would have mentioned, in the Life Divine he would have surely mentioned overmind. But here immediately he takes the gradations of the supermind. So, between the highest levels of the intuitive and the lowest levels of the supermind are the overmental gradations. He has not specifically dealt with them in this. That is why he wanted to revise, and perhaps he would have added a chapter here or there. It is a concealed operation of the super, it is an operation of the concealed supermind. And because it is there only, we can contact. From that point of view, you can say it is the link.
More than the other planes, that's what you mean.
Yeah.
Because you don't talk about the illumination. You don't talk about the higher, you talk about the
After
illumination.
All, what is intuition? Direct contact with the truth. And because you have the potentiality of experiencing the direct contact with truth, you develop it.
This is makes me know that beyond the physical knowledge, all that we have is the physical world, it transforms itself at some level, perhaps metaphysical.
Between the physical knowledge and occult knowledge, there are a lot of other kinds of knowledge. Physical knowledge, mental knowledge. Mental knowledge? Physical knowledge is what concerns physical things. Mental knowledge is the knowledge of ideas, organization of concepts. There is also mental knowledge, idea, isn't it? Speculation, philosophies, they are mental knowledge.
Beyond mental knowledge is the occult knowledge. And beyond that
when the intuitive plane,
even occult knowledge seems to
be occult knowledge is not beyond, it is behind. At any level, there is an occult physical knowledge. There is an occult mental knowledge. There is an occult spiritual knowledge. What is occult? Occult is what you don't see by the naked eye. So it is always behind the veil. What we know is only the surface expression of what we can know. So even without being spiritual, even without arriving at the heights of mental knowledge of which man is capable, an ordinary unregenerate man, a crude man, a crude intelligence, he can have some occult knowledge to do tricks, to do black magic, to do that famous rope trick or whatever it is. You see, they can do. You can see in India, so many people, they don't know ABC. So occult knowledge, you don't have to go there. It is for spiritual knowledge that you have to go beyond that. Occult knowledge, where you are, at any stage that you are in your development, you have just to withdraw behind the surface and the occult ranges open.
Do you remember once you talked about the fact that Sri Aurobindo was guiding at least India and certainly Manchuria? What's the connection with this lens and this overhead area that you spoke of, from which we see?
He is guiding, for instance, India, even today, especially today, from an overhead position. He is not concerned with individual movements. The movement of forces, probabilities, possibilities, actualities, It is those that he is changing or putting in their place. So look at that from their point of view. The individuals do not count. Day-to-day affairs do not matter. The general disposition of forces, that is what he is handling. And that is necessarily from above the earth plane. But relating himself to the earth plane, he is not just pressing the button at some in a truth plane and leaving himself absorbed. He has put himself in connection with this. Actively he is guiding the developing movement. As a result of his pressure, all those who are open to his consciousness necessarily get the right guidance, the right inspiration, the right impulse. In whatever they want, if you want to do business, if I want to do writing, if you want to do another scientific thing, each one will get the right impulse, the right guidance in the field in which one is working, when one is open to his consciousness, has devotion in him and as a link, or mentally he has admiration for the truth that he has brought, or puts oneself into contact with him in any way.
Can you say that he has stationed himself in that area that is usually there above the Sahasrara?
Above the?
Above the Sahasrara center that he has stationed.
That he did it even when he was in body here.
Huh.
Always.
So
he said throughout his yogic life, after he got the silence in Baroda, 1905 or 6. After that he said he always functioned from the overhead center.
So this is not the main area from where?
No. As regarding the individuals, we say overhead center you must have. As long as you are living in a human body. But once you leave the human body, where are the centers? You see, as long as you live, you are embodied.
Oh,
not always. Not always.
What was that?
It has nothing to do with intuition. There is. In many of us, we have got what we call conscience. Conscience is a formation in our consciousness created by the environmental beliefs, ethical standards, and our acceptance of those standards as our rule of life. Certain beliefs that I personally have, certain beliefs that have come down to me from the elders and which are honored in the present society, I make them my governing principles. Now, when I have strong faith in them, they constitute what is called my conscience. And when that conscience is alive, when you do a thing right or wrong or whatever it is, it makes itself felt either as a strong feeling or in words. What Socrates called his demon, it was not really his soul, or what Gandhiji called his small inner voice. That is his conscience. Now that conscience is a voice of the standards, principles which he accepted. So this is the best interpretation we can give. When we go on to do something right, there is a sinking, wrong, there is a sinking feeling. There is a feeling, no, we shouldn't do. If we honor it, if we listen to it, it will come again next time. Two or three times if we ignore it, nothing, it dies. Similarly, in good things, it gives a supporting feeling. Yes, yes, this is the thing to be done. So that is the inner voice of the conscience. It may happen in spiritual life that the soul or the psychic being may also guide you directly, either in the form of a voice or in the form of feeling. But one need not go to the psychic level to hear a voice, because the ego is very clever in projecting voices, imitating the voice of conscience, the voice of soul, the voice of your teacher, the voice of God. So our own desires, preferences, they are very clever in taking the form of these inner voices. That is one. Apart from that, hostile forces are more clever than we are in injecting themselves. They will take even the form, say, of mother's voice or Shrivindo's voice. And so the voices are a very dangerous proposition. For myself, I have made it a principle, and I always advise everybody, don't be guided by voices and visions. Shrivindo has written somewhere, leave voices and visions to themselves. Look for experience. So Gandhiji himself, his voice misguided him in so many ways, and the nation had to pay for it. It was not the voice of God, but because of his political stature, because of the credulity of the followers. Even when they knew it was not right, they followed him. That's another matter.
That brings me to another thing. What about other senses, like the smell, like the mother's presence is there, or Sri Aurobindo is there?
Yes, yes, that is true. The subtle senses there are, and they take cognizance of subtle fragrances, subtle aromas and all that. That is true. But also bad smells which you don't see on the physical plane, they also you can get. Many people, even when there is no coal tar, you know, they immediately start getting some coal tar smell. So it was explained to them later on, it is the voice of the, smell of their own subconscious, taking a concrete form and inviting attention. So it is true. Smell, all these on all levels, the occult things are there. But it is always dangerous to be guided. One can take note, even when there is no jasmine flower, you get jasmine smell, rose smell. They are common experiences in our ashram. At any rate, they used to be. And nobody thought twice about it. One would just feel that, yes, my subtle senses, subtle smell, these things are working. Something of me has opened to the subtler dimension. That's all. It does not mean a big spiritual attainment. It is a sign that something is happening.